Okay, good morning. Thank you all for coming. Today I want to talk to you all about a study that we've done recently looking at HIV risk and treatment among opiate injectors recruited here in Denver. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Max Min, Mark Royer, and Bob Booth. I have no relationships to disclose. So the scope of the problem, as we all know, is that opiate-using IDUs continue to engage in sex and needle risk behaviors. Substance abuse treatment, specifically methadone, has been shown to help reduce HIV risk behavior among drug users and also drug use. So here we wanted to look at specific interventions to find out if they had any effect on treatment entry, HIV risk, and other behaviors. We also wanted to find out once IDUs entered treatment and stayed in, what effect did that have on HIV risk. On a timer. Okay. We wanted to look at what predicts treatment entry and then also look if, see if there were any differences for males and females on these different outcomes. So we have two behavioral interventions that we're looking at today, case management, and it's a strengths-based model. I'll tell you a little bit about it in a moment, and case management plus a facilitated therapeutic alliance. And the outcomes we were looking at were methadone treatment engagement and retention and also the reduction of HIV risk behaviors. Our eligibility criteria was they needed to be opiate injectors in the 30 days prior to baseline. We verified this through visual inspection of venipuncture, looking for recent track marks and also urinalysis. At least 18 years of age, they couldn't be in drug abuse treatment when they entered, and we verified this by self-report and also doing a UA test for methadone at the baseline interview. Of course, not too intoxicated or impaired mentally, so they couldn't voluntarily consent or participate. They couldn't be transient or have a reason why they couldn't be available for our follow-up interviews, such as going pending jail time. And they needed to also be willing to see a treatment counselor. For this study that I'll present today, we had 410 male and female opiate-using IDUs that were recruited through street outreach here in Denver, and they were randomized to two conditions. The case management intervention that we use is a strengths-based approach that came from the late Dr. Harvey Siegel, and it looks at meeting the client where he or she is. It also builds on past strengths that the client will tell us about. So we'll say, for instance, tell us about some things that you were doing before you you started using drugs that you were successful in, and sort of building on positive things and strengths in their life instead of negative, and trying to help them then navigate local resources and even enter treatment. So we provided that for 4 months for the first group. The second group received that same intervention as well as Facilitated Therapeutic Alliance, or the FTA. And what this did was we tried to facilitate a relationship between the treatment counselor and the client in an effort to boost treatment engagement and retention. So we our case manager made an appointment with the treatment counselor, got them to meet with the client. We did a role induction so the client really understood what they were going to be going through if they entered treatment, had a tour of the treatment site. So anything we could do to sort of foster a very nice bond and relationship between the counselor and the client, which often is a problem with people entering and dropping out of treatment if they don't have a good bond with their counselor. So we thought if we could facilitate, cement that relationship, maybe they'd be more successful in treatment. We used an interview-administered questionnaire with ACASI for the sensitive questions, that is sex and drug-related risk questions. They would use headphones and a touch screen so they could answer those sensitive questions anonymously, like how many times did you have unprotected sex in the last 30 days? They may not want to answer that for social desirability to our interviewer, so we had those anonymous. And we did baseline interviews with a follow-up at 6 and 12 months, but the data I'm showing today is just the 6-month data. We use a risk behavior questionnaire, which is a widely known measure used since the cooperative agreement back in the early 90s by used with NIDA and many other researchers. It is a questionnaire that just asks about many different behavioral risk questions, drug use and alcohol use and things such as that. We also use the Tom McClellan's Addiction Severity Index. So here are some of the things we wanted to look at. First, we wanted to see what was the effect of the intervention on some certain outcomes, such as treatment entry and retention, HIV risk, employment, criminal justice, and drug use. Next, we thought, well, if they entered treatment and stayed in, how then did that affect certain things such as drug use and HIV risk? Whoops. Uh-oh. Oh, no. I'm going the wrong way. Okay, there we go. Then we wanted to look, what was the effect of baseline characteristics on treatment entry? What determined whether people might have gone in or not, or were there differences, such as intervention assignment, whether they were in the CM or the CMFTA, gender, age, ethnicity, education, employment, drug use, and HIV risk? And then finally, doing a logistic regression to see if we could come up with some predictors of why they entered treatment, or factors associated with entry into treatment. We used t-test, chi-square, Fisher's exact, and Mantel-Hansel test. P less than 0.25 was tested for inclusion in a multivariate model. We did multiple logistic regression, stepwise regression, and used SAS version 9.1. So this slide shows you the demographics. I've broken it out by case management group versus CMFTA. There were no significant differences between the two groups. So you can see that about our sample was about 3/4 male, about half white, average age about 40. Most had high school graduation or more education. About a third were employed. Close to 50% reported being homeless. 3/4 reported living alone. About 3% had some criminal justice involvement in the past 30 days, and about 10% were veterans. Oh boy, I gotta hurry. Okay, on the drug use characteristics, again, no significant differences between the two groups. About 20 years average injecting. Many, about half, had prior treatment. They reported a very high number of injection drug use in the past 30 days, 115 times on average. About using a dirty needle about 6 times, using a dirty cooker and drug solution also 12%. That wasn't 6 times, that was 12%, sorry. And also they've reported some sex risk behaviors in the past 30 days at baseline. So what we found was when we looked at the intervention effect on outcomes, what we found was that being in the CMFTA, that is having the treatment counselor relationship, was significantly different than not having the FTA for staying in treatment for retention. When we looked at males only, we found that that same effect persisted, that they tended to stay in treatment longer if they were in the FTA. When we look at treatment entry on outcomes at 6-month follow-up, we found that those who entered treatment were significantly more likely to reduce their number of times injecting drugs, and that persisted with both males and females. Even in the bottom box, the females is also significant, although it's not bold, but both males and females separately had the same effect of reducing their drug use. When we looked at treatment retention, so did they stay more than 90 days? For those who stayed in treatment more than 90 days, they reported significantly more reduction in injection drug use and reporting number of risky drug use behaviors. That did not persist in males. However, the change in number, the reduction of reported risky drug behaviors did persist for females only. Next, we wanted to see if baseline HIV risk and drug use behaviors differed by treatment entry, and we found that for those who entered treatment at baseline, they reported injecting more heroin at baseline, injecting more drugs overall, and also more employment than those who did not end up entering treatment. There were no significant differences on these other variables listed below. So then finally, we looked at a multiple logistic regression to see what were the factors associated with entering treatment. We found that people who were employed were 3 times as likely to go into treatment. Those who had injected heroin in the past 30 days at baseline were more likely, and those who had reported sex with an IDU were less likely to enter treatment. So in summary, the FTA seems to show that there's the additional help provided by this bond between client and counselor may help male clients especially stay in treatment for more than 90 days. Male and female clients in this FTA intervention did show reduction in needle risk behaviors more than those who didn't. Once in treatment, males and females do reduce the number of times they inject drugs, and for those who actually stay in longer than 90 days, we find that males and females overall and separately reduce the number of times injecting drugs and needle risk behaviors. So there remains a trend for women as well when they're analyzed separately. There were baseline differences in those who entered treatment and those who didn't. For example, those who entered injected heroin and drugs more times in the 30 days prior to the baseline, and they tended to be employed. Predictors of entering treatment were being employed, injecting heroin more times at baseline, and not having sex with an IDU. So finally, the FDA may assist methadone clients, in particular males, in remaining in treatment and reducing HIV risk. Once in treatment, drug use is reduced. Furthermore, staying in longer can have additional positive effects, such as reducing needle risk behaviors, and especially for women. So because heavier injection drug use and employment may predict treatment entry, an intervention could be developed to target those who are less likely to enter treatment for additional gains in facilitating treatment entry for this population. I'd like to acknowledge the Project Safe staff, as well as the ART staff, Project Safe clients, and of course our support, NIDA. Okay, that's it. I did it.